Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm alive. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been one of those weeks, without getting into all of it. It's been one of those weeks.
Yeah.
But I'm here, and sometimes that's the best you can do, and that's okay.
Everyone's coughing. We have to introduce them.
Yeah, you nasty motherfucker. Wear a mask. Cover your mouth. God.
My microphone has a pop filter, so
well, it don't work.
Like a mask.
God, OBS keeps going red. I'm gonna love tonight. Anyway, PartyCast. Chris is here. Purnell is here. Tim is here. How is everybody doing?
I'm great.
I'm burping. Oh, there you go.
But and yeah, Tim's just silent.
Yeah, I'm doing, like, stuff for work, like, over here, so I'm, like, half. You don't need me until it's time for my review.
That is peak podcasting right there.
He's like, what are you doing? I'm working on the clock.
I'm doing my job.
I was like, pretend I'm not here until it's my time. Just go without me.
So, Tim, you're here to review this game. Tell us about it. Man, these numbers just don't want to compile. What the fuck? Pardon. I mean... This game is about a
guy. It's my turn already.
Can't compile numbers.
What game was it? Did you say? What do I have to play this week?
40 hours a week. Yeah, I can play that game. I play it all the time. I'm good at it. I'm a pro.
So, Purnell, how was your week? You're talkative.
It's hard to even claim that, really, for me. I'm trying to bounce back from Shittown, USA, honestly. But
Shittown, USA. Where exactly is that?
My brain. But
I thought it was gonna be like south of Philly or something.
Oh no, honestly, Philly was a large part of why I'm slowly trying to pull out of this tailspin I've been in for like a month or so, which is that I had a couple things over the weekend. I went to a wedding on a Saturday. Usually weddings make me feel like shit, but I end up having a good time because, of course, there are celebrations and you're with your friends and you're celebrating your friends. So once you're in the mind, the zone, you're having a great time. But leading up to them, I never feel great. So I was glad that I went, had a good time. And then, I played some board games again, like hardcore board game day for the first time in fucking forever. It wasn't even a lot of people. It was just like me, the friend, his kid, and like one other person that he brought down that's also a friend of ours. And we just had a good time.
That's all you need for a good board game night. Four people. Perfect.
Four people, exactly. It ended up being a good time. It was nice. And I'm always bouncing around this idea like, maybe I'm just done with this whole hobby. Like, I don't play them anymore. And, you know, with COVID, it adds to the levels of depression when you're just like, well, it's just me again. You know, but every once in a blue moon, I get those moments like what happened on that day over the weekend. I'm like, this is actually, there's movement. There's room for, like, enjoyment here. I just got to, you know, work hard to get to it. And beyond that, I'll just make do. And then, of course, just like trying to balance finances and crap. Still hoping for that student loan removal. Ha ha, right? But I still hope for it. But I'm also preparing just in case it doesn't happen. And dating can kiss my ass. COVID dating can blow my brains out. And that's my life.
Who here is happy they don't have to date right now?
All of you should be raising your fucking hands.
I mean, arguably nobody has to, but...
Dating was never good. Dating now is goddamn miserable. Fucking miserable. And heaven forbid you go on an app every 5 seconds. It's just a list of demands. It's not even about getting to know each other. It's a list of demands. Don't live at home. You better have a good job. Ain't here to play. No games. If you voted for Trump, swipe left. Oh, my God. Everything's stupid. And it's like, tell me about yourself. No, you tell me. Do you live while you do you own your house? Where do you work for a living? Okay, that's all I care about. You don't make enough money. Bye. How often do you like to travel? Will you pay for my trips? Oh, fuck everything.
Sugar Daddy Purnell.
Sugar daddy. It's all sugar daddy.
Everybody who meets people the old-fashioned way, I don't know, socially, you lucky fucks. Because the market is garbage.
I met my wife on fucking MySpace, so it's not always about going out there and socializing. Sometimes you just bump into someone by happenstance.
Kids, just go meet your wife on MySpace.
Yeah, go to MySpace. It's this brand new hot
ICQ.
Go to my CQ.
Nice.
I met my wife at an anime convention.
Nice.
Oh, God.
Well, actually, technically, it was at a meeting for a video game convention that was being held at an anime convention.
Wait, wow. It was a meeting for a video game convention that was at an anime convention.
Yes. You might be familiar with that video game convention, by the way.
What was it?
MAGFest.
What? Tell me more of this MAGFest.
No, there was a MAGFest meeting being held at KatsuCon in, like, I don't know, 03, 04.
Oh, okay. That makes sense then. So, like, now I'm thinking probably I should have been at, no, that would have been MAGFest 2, probably.
Yeah. No, it was after your turn as the Defense of the Dark Arts teacher, as it were.
No, I was still on. I was still doing it for year two. It's just I wasn't doing like staff meetings and shit anymore.
Yeah,
I was just like, look, I know what I'm doing. You just tell me how much money I got, and I'll go from there. That's all I need.
Bag three was when my shit got stolen.
See, that's what I'm saying. If I was on staff, that wouldn't have happened. But I was done.
But all got stolen at MAGFest.
I remember, well, okay, so my copy of F-Zero GX did not, because I let them borrow it, but nobody actually checked to see if the disc was in the case. It was actually still in my GameCube, but my GameCube copy of Ikaruga did actually get ganked at MAGFest. And I was able to get the last copy at GameStop when I got back and was reimbursed by MAGFest, so...
Oh, that's a relief. That game is rare and expensive.
And I think like a copy of Knights into Dreams of all things, and that was, you know, easy enough to replace. But
Ikaruga was an affordable Saturn game.
Yeah.
Would that be are you gonna replace in the present day though? Like, is that Knights? A copy game now? Yeah.
Probably.
Let me see.
Yeah,
clackety claggity. But we can all
eBay's.
If you mess up my online and it wasn't during the early heydays of internet interactions, like, you know, Joe's aforementioned MySpace, where we still had our top friends list and everybody had a good time being friends with good Tom. Time. Well, because now it's all hot buttered shit. It's all shit.
It's like $100 like completing case, but $40 for the disc only. By Saturn standards, that's very affordable.
Yeah, it is. I'm trying to sell Magic Knight Rare Earth right now. I have some knuckleheads like, I'll give you $850. I'm like, fuck you.
If what
I'm
do selling, you have I'm listed for? The gold.
Going thousand. To the moon.
I'm going right to the moon. Like, I don't like, I'm trying to get break through the wall of selling my stuff, you know, and not, you know, being attached so much. And that's hard to do.
Dude, as soon as you start, everything is going to go. As soon as you really start.
That's not true.
For me, it's so easy to go through my stuff now. It feels like I hit that turning point of, oh, I don't really need all this shit anymore. Because honestly, I don't really need all this shit anymore. And I'd rather send it to someone who would enjoy it.
Yeah. That's how I got that copy of Magic Knight Ray Earth from you, Joe.
Yeah.
But it's like a double-edged sword there for me, though. Because on one hand, it's like a combination of like depression, plus, like, trying to establish who the fuck am I, you know, all those things. But at the same time, there's also this element that also does genuinely like having a library, like just going into a room that would otherwise have nothing in it in my house. I'm like, hey, it's just shelves with like cool games on them. And I might, every once in a blue, I'm like, all right, turn on the PS2 and take a game off the shelf like Crimson C2. No one knows what the fuck that is anymore. And just like put it in and go, what the heck is this game? Like, it's been sitting on my shelf. I'll have fun with it for a bit. So stuff like that is cool. But at the same time, when, what was it? My friend, like, Norman was, like, posted the image of Magic Knight Rare Earth as, like, worth $1,300. Like, yeah, I should probably look into selling that. So
everybody's got a price.
That was fine. But that's also why when the guy's like, he was like, I'll give you $850. I'm like, I want $1,000 or more. I want to be able to say I sold a game for $1,000. And if I don't get that money, I don't need it right now. So I'm not breaking my neck to sell it for less.
It's fair.
Give me what I want or I'm not selling it. So, you know, so, and that's how it is. Like, Because I got it. Because it's amazing how many games I actually have that are worth money. Like the more I start to look into it, the more surprised I am. Like Dark Spire on the DS. Peanuts at GameStop. I always already wanted it, but I was like, it's not my kind of game though. So I'll hand
$9.87 on clearance, baby.
That's right. Yep. Same deal. Like pretty much on clearance, and now the game sells for mint. And I'm like, how the fuck did that happen? It's like I have so many oddball games like that where it's like I would have never thought when I bought them they would be somehow worth money now. But by that same token, there are games that I wish I bought when they were like that, like Rule of Fucking Rose, that now I can never get because I'm not paying collector's price for shit. Mm-hmm. But I've always wanted to play that, and I was like, that was one of those small periods where I was like, you know, I'll just wait until it goes on discount because I have a lot of games. I've been buying too many.
Starting to think someone was spying on me at GameStop the other day because we talked about Rule of Rose there at GameStop, and I think you've been spying on me, and we also talked about Alice Madness Returns, and I got Facebook ads for that fucking game, like, out of nowhere.
Yeah. It's your phone. That's what's spying on you, Joe.
I think it's one of you guys. Pernell, I think you're spying on me.
No, I would just honestly show you ads for Alice Madness Returns all the time because I wish that franchise would come the fuck back. I loved that game.
I mean, just the fact that I talk to you every week for a couple hours, that's more than like literally any other friend I've ever had. So I don't need to spy on you. I already get like
way too much of you. I get way too much of you.
Like, I know you, Joe. I know you. I'm glad to hear, like, I don't know if it's going to lead to anything, but they're like re-releasing Alan Wake finally, like, this year, which will be awesome because that
digging into our news for Thursday. Jeez, thanks, Pernell.
Suckers! But like, I am looking forward to that because that's a game franchise that to this day kills me. Like, I never finished American Nightmare because I just couldn't quite get into it compared to the original.
Oh, that's such a cool game.
It was like I liked the when you're in the first town area, but then they start like just repeating stuff and they're like, but I did like the story and everything, and I would love to see them come back to it full steam ahead. Like, okay, let's do this right. Let's give Alan Wake the respect it deserves, not treat it like some kind of like terrible game that is not terrible at all, actually. So, and now maybe they'll get this due. Is getting a remaster or whatever. Maybe people will
maybe this odd game. Yeah, maybe this odd game from 10 years ago will get its just desserts now that's being re-released.
I would like to see that. Cause it deserves
just like a game that's second.
Yeah. I was about to say, wait a minute. You can always reverse the order for that purpose. Do it.
Too late now.
Segway! It was perfect.
Well, fuck it. Tim, you want to go first?
I mean, I can, sure, yeah.
Cool, fuck it. First game to talk about tonight is El Shaddai, Ascension of the Metatron, developed and published by Crimco Limited. Released September 2nd on Steam for $39.99. El Shaddai, originally released in 2011, is a unique third-person action adventure filled with a deeply artistic world-building, outstanding aesthetics, and thrilling battles. Experience an incredible mix of 2D-like platformer action and colorful 3D world in an exceptional setting. Tim, tell us about your time with this one.
All right, so not to like spoil the ending of this review, but it's like for the past 10 years or so, when I guess maybe more like the past like 5 or 6, anytime someone, you know, broaches the question, what is your most underrated game, your most underappreciated, underplayed game, my go-to answer has been El Shaddai Ascension of the Metatron for the Xbox 360, because that game was fucking dope. So now here it is on Steam, and guess what, it is still fucking dope. So, you know, last week I kind of levied quite a bit of criticism at that NIS Prinny Pack for just being a pretty straightforward port of two PS2 games. And this is just a straightforward port of an Xbox 360 game. But you know, because it has such an incredible art style, like, it does not show its age. Like,
visually, it holds up better than those NIS games do.
Yeah, and you know, some even other contemporary games from that era that, you know, go for a more realistic visual style. Like that's always, you know, I feel a thing with video games, is that artistic style is going to hold up better over going for, you know, shooting for the fences with realism or whatever. And this game just has a gorgeous art style to it. It's just the environments, the way it uses camera angles, the way, you know, the character design, everything top to bottom is just such a treat to look at. It's just so.
Tim's still doing work spreadsheets. He's like, fuck.
No, I'm not. I'm just like, it surprised me. No. But yeah, like it plays with, you know, I'm trying to think of a way to describe it, like almost like cell shady, like watercolor. Like I said, it does a lot with perspective. Like there's areas in the game. Like it's mostly a third person kind of action platformer. Think like your Devil May Cry type deal, but it will switch to like odd camera angles from time to time.
I'm like expecting a giant no out of this, but Cole, have you played El Shaddai?
Hell no, I ain't.
Yes. Yeah. I was gonna say you would do a better job at describing the artwork than we would be able to.
A smear plebs.
Let me Google this real quick. Let me see what.
Yeah, you have to search El Shaddai Ascension of the Metatron, or else you end up looking at the Bible.
It's so different from stage to stage as well.
Yes, it is.
So many different styles represented in the game, and so many genres represented in the game at times.
And it plays it just looks really cool.
Looks kind of like a blend of 3D and cell shading.
Yeah,
but also kind of low poly in some of these. It's very digital tune.
Yeah. Just like, every stage has a look to it. You're not going to get bored of looking at anything in this game, really. It does pull through from, you know, early Christian Hebrew mythology for its inspiration, though. I don't know if this blonde man wearing jeans running around is exactly what they had in mind, or like, you know, your save points are Lucifer wearing a black suit talking to God on a cell phone.
But are you telling me they didn't have cell phones in denim back in those days?
I mean, because, you know, time is weird in this game, like between kind of the prologue and the first chapter, like hundreds of years go by. I mean, so what you're doing is you are Enoch, and you are tasked with hunting down these angels that have fallen to Earth and are mucking shit up. So it takes you like literally hundreds of years to find the first. Well, not literally in game time, literally hundreds of years to track down the first one, which is done in a side scrolling sequence while it's like showing the opening credits and you're like fighting enemies and like time is passing in the lower right corner. So just kind of a very upfront example of how this game plays with its perspective and its storytelling and its artistic styles just right off the bat. So when you are actually playing the game, and when I played the demo for this game, you know, back in for the 360, I did not like it. And I did not like it because the demo did not do a good job of explaining what the fuck was going on in this game. Because it's weird. There are boss fights that you are intended to lose, much like in, you know, some RPGs from time to time. And you will get kind of, you know, knocked out and have to resurrect and get back in there. Like the combat system eventually, and they kind of introduce these mechanics gradually, but once you get going with it, there are three different weapons. They're not like standard normal things that are easy to explain. So there is an arch, which kind of looks like a batleth from Star Trek, except turned backwards. There is like this ring of projectiles, and then there's like some big fisty shield things. And the way that it works is a lot of time there are enemies that just have like normal like spears or whatever, but you'll also encounter enemies that are wielding one of those three weapons, and there's kind of a rock, paper, scissors dynamic as to what weapon is effective against what weapon, and you can steal those weapons off of enemies. Like, you don't have these weapons permanently. You have to grab them off of enemies and then purify them to use them. So combat will have this really, you get into a nice flow where you have a weapon in your hand and you identify like, okay, well, I need to fight this guy first because he has, you know, my weapon is good against his weapon, and I need the weapon that he is holding to fight this other guy over there. And you'll kind of flow through battle, attacking and disarming enemies and just going from one to the next. And like the camera will sweep in and do like close-ups for big hits and stuff like that. So it's really engaging and appealing to just watch play out. Even if like the move list is not as deep as something as a Devil May Cry, but each weapon does have its own unique attacks. You know, you have your light heavy combos going on. There's launchers, there's air combos. There is ways to play around with juggles and stuff to engage with the system more, but it's not like the craziest 3D character action combat system you've ever seen. But that's fine, because in my opinion, because it has a good flow to it and does unique things along the way. unique things along the way. I mean, it's just interesting. It's just different. There's nothing that's quite like it. So yeah, playing through the story, it's really addicting, just because you just really don't know what you're going to see next and where things are going to go. And there's, you know, some things that are just kind of like badass awesome, some things that are just kind of silly goofy, some things that are kind of dark and spooky. It's just a ride. It's a lot of fun. And along with the visuals being incredible and the gameplay being a lot of fun and going a lot of interesting places, like, this game has a really killer soundtrack on top of all that. You know, it just everything about this game comes together beautifully, to just make something that's so crazy and fun and interesting to play. And I think that more people will be interested in getting into it now, since in particular you have things like Nier that have taken off a lot more, and people have gotten into that, you know, weirdness over there. Like, this is in that vein of weirdness and kind of offbeat action video gamey stuff. The only knock against it, and as kind of I said at the top, is that it is a straight Xbox 360 port. Like, there's not anything in the way of, you know, advanced graphic options or control options, or, you know, there's no like big, it's not a remake or remaster. It is just the game from 10 years ago ported to PC.
So playable on PC with no playable bells and whistles.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even have mouse and keyboard support. So
yeah,
you gotta play with a controller.
Mm-hmm.
And on the phone, if you come away liking this game, there's the sequel too, or the game that came after it, supposedly. But did you ever get a chance to play
Lost
that?
Child.
Yeah. No, I did not.
I reviewed Lost Child, and it's good.
Yeah.
So there you go, Tim.
Afterward, I didn't even know about the connection until my friend was like, had played Lost Child and was like, did you know this is like a sequel to El Shaddai? I was like, what's El Shaddai?
someone like Tim who knew what El Shaddai was.
Yeah, no, right. I do remember hearing about, I mean, like, it's weird. I mean, it's a role-playing game, right? Like, there's the connection, so it is still, like, a very different thing.
It's a dungeon crawler with, like, monster collection.
Yeah. So, yes, but also, you know, it's different. Like, completely different genre. Anyways, though, I think El Shaddai is well worth checking out, even if it is a bare bones Steam port. Like, the point is that the game is there and the game runs and the game is awesome. So,
and I was misinformed on the price. It is not $39.99. It is $29.99.
Yes. And it is currently on sale.
Yeah.
Until the 14th for one more week. So by the time this podcast posts, like, a, you know, six more days, till the 14th, it is on sale for $24.29, so it's 20% off.
And only like $2 more for the special edition with the art book and the
soundtrack. Yeah, I recommend that to get the soundtrack, because that soundtrack is, yeah, like I said, fantastic. Wow, that soundtrack by itself is like $10. That's but like, if you buy the bundle, it only adds on like $1.50 for that in the art book. And the art book, like the extras are like $23.99, but if you add them onto the game, they're like $1.50.
Yeah. So you might as well just go all out and get the deluxe edition. While it's on sale, do it now.
Yeah, absolutely. That seems like
stop the podcast. Stop listening to us. I mean, you already heard.
Delete your Twitch.
Probably the best game. I don't know.
Yeah, just do it. Oh wait,
no. There's a cat game later. We're good.
Stay with us. I was answering emails while I was, you know, recording this podcast. You're fine to go and purchase El Shaddai whilst you listen. You can multitask. I can multitask, and so can you.
Good shit. All right. I guess that's it for you, Tim.
Yeah, I'm going to go to bed. Then I can go to work and do more work. Yeah.
He doesn't love working. Working is fun.
Do you have any final words, Tim?
No, I don't.
Nothing.
Why not? You could just say working is actually not fun. Your final words.
Yeah. I thought I was going to ask if you had final words, and you would be, yes.
I was going to say.
Yeah. I don't know if I could do that anymore.
Yeah. It does have, the game does have a story mode to it. So there is like easy and hard, but I chose to play it on medium.
Like our next game.
There you go. You're welcome.
Christ.
Good night.
Christ. Get out.
Next game to talk about tonight is The Medium, developed and published by Bloober Team, released September 3rd on PS5 for $49.99. Discover a dark mystery only a medium can solve, travel to an abandoned communist resort, and use your unique psychic abilities to uncover its deeply disturbing secrets, solve dual reality puzzles, survive encounters with sinister spirits, and explore two realities at the same time. Brunel, tell us about your time with The Medium.
This game has one difficulty, and it's not medium. There you go. Follow that up.
Wait, wouldn't it be by definition?
Yeah.
No, it would be adequate. It'd be adequate difficulty. So this is a game that originally released on Xbox Series X, if I'm not mistaken. And I was always interested in giving it a go. And thankfully, with this review, I was able to finally give it a try. And it's interesting because this game did a good job of highlighting my recent challenge with gaming as I get older, in that sometimes it takes a little bit more oomph to get me like into a game. Like if you don't get the ball rolling fairly early on, as far as the pulse or the tension or whatever, Purnell's falling asleep. And that did happen to me like, you know, once or twice on my first two attempts at booting this game up. And I was worried that I wasn't going to appreciate the game for what it was. But then I got past the wall. The Purnell wall, so to speak. And suffice it to say, it became my entire weekend. And I, you know, played through the entire damn game. I was very much hooked into it. But enough about my love of the game before getting to the actual content. Let's talk about the game itself. What is it? So you play as, Marianne. There we go. As Marianne, who is basically a woman who has a strange and powerful gift. She can exist in both the natural realm and the spirit realm simultaneously. And she doesn't know why she has this gift, but she does utilize it to the best of her ability to help people pass on to the other side. Funny enough, you come into this game at an interesting time in her life because her mentor passes away. And then she magically gets a call telling her to come to a place. Because all of her answers will be solved, will be provided to her there. Sounds like a typical survival horror game, which is funny, because that is not what this is. This is actually, and it's worth clarifying that, because if you were looking at any trailers or any descriptors that people used, or the mentioning of like Akira Yamaoka to compare it to like Silent Hill or something, you would think that this was a survival horror game. But it's actually more of an adventure narrative. Because you're basically playing through a movie, like fully interactive with the environments, mind you, but you're playing through a movie. What ends up happening is you progress through what is considered the Niwa Resort. That's the main place. There's other places, but I'm not going to spoil that. But you progress across these environments to get to the bottom of the mystery of who you are and such. And what ends up happening is, it's a typical exploration game for the most part. You know, walk around an environment, you know, find an item that you might be able to use here to unlock a room or whatever. But there's a specific little gimmick that is especially special for this game. And that is the medium's ability to do her job. Ha, I know, right? She's really good. But no, her job is actually the ability, or she utilizes the ability to live in different realms. At certain points in the game, she'll get a headache or so, resulting in a sort of split where the game will take place on two sides, either horizontally or vertically, where you are controlling both the same character in two different environments, the spirit realm and the real world. So the worlds themselves are laid out exactly the same for the most part, but they look very different, very different. The spirit world looks gruesome, you know, veiny and skin-like and messy, and the real world looks miserable and dread because you're at an abandoned resort. But as you explore the environment, you will, like, say, like, have, like, scenarios where, like, you want to interact with one area or the other, and in a cool manner, the game kind of directs buttons specifically to the environment you want to experience with. So if you come across a light switch in the normal world, for example, it's the square button to interact with it. But if it's on the other world, the spirit world, it's actually the X button, so you don't get confused with which button, which area you want to work with. Every once in a while, however, the thing that makes this interesting is that she has to have clear passage on both sides to get through. So if a room is blocked off in one side, she can't get to it on either side, which means now you are faced with a puzzle where you need to figure out a way to move the obstruction so that you can progress on both realities. And the tools at her disposal to do this are as follows, because she doesn't get a ton, but it still works out for her. She can do what's called a spirit blast. On the spirit side, world side, there's like these like vesties, like these pools of spirit energy that you can come across, and you can absorb the energy and then use it to charge up and fire a blast, which can be used to like do things like activate electrical sockets or to push back, you know, like just or basically just activate switches and such. There's a spirit shield, which can be used to put a wall around yourself to block yourself, to protect yourself from like moths that might affect you in the spirit world. If you stay around them too long, they'll kill you. And lastly, though not particularly, but I won't spoil what the other stuff is, there is a out-of-body experience you can perform where you basically send your entire spirit to the spirit realm, and you have a certain amount of time to engage and interact over there before your soul is called back to your main body, which ends up leading to some fun puzzles too. Now, at the surface, it sounds like it's just a bunch of exploration, finding clues, giving stories, helping people pass on every once in a while because you'll come across some NPCs and stuff in this place that you're at. But unfortunately, there is one adversary in the entire game, but he's fucking creepy. He goes by the Mao. And when the Mao shows up, he's like a freaking like gargoyle, like demon thing. He's voiced by Troy Baker, and he does a very good job of making you go shit every time he shows up, because he does a great job of portraying a creepy person. And when he shows up, it comes up in a number of scenarios. He's chasing after you. You got to outrun him, or it'll be like stealth sequences where you got to kind of sneak past him without getting caught. And those are honestly the most tense parts of the game. And sometimes you will die because, quite frankly, you'll be running from this guy. And there might be situations where you're supposed to do a thing that you don't quite realize you're supposed to do. And then he'll grab you and kill you. And you got to reload the game and try again until you freaking figure it out. But, I mean, way of the world, that's just kind of how it works, right? But thankfully, thanks to the magic of solid-state drives, the reload doesn't really take all that time. It's like, boop, dead, go back, try again. It's not all that big a deal. And I was able to endure it. But for the most part, like all these things, it just all came together in a way that it really worked for me. Like I said, I was hooked on this game, and I stayed up till like 5 a.m. on a night where I had a wedding the next day because I had to finish it. Like I wanted to finish this game, and that doesn't fucking happen. Oh, so man.
Sorry that I I ended up ruining your wedding plan.
Sorry, I gave you a game you'd fucking like. I don't know what to tell you, Purdue. But no, like, the game is really cool. And I know that when you go on the old yield internet, there's like a mixed bag impression of this game. Like, some people dog on it or whatever. But honestly, like, I think it did what it was meant to do. Like, it's a one and done kind of game, unless you're a trophy hunter. You can go back for all the where you want to go back and like build all the spirit, like soul imagery, which is like, you know, like memory fragments you can like piece together by like moving the thumbstick when you find them or whatever, or finding all the documentation. Aside from any of that kind of stuff, once you finish the game, you've seen the story. But that's not a big deal, because to me, we live in a world where, you know, like, the game took me like 9-10 hours to beat. And with that in mind, I mean, I got a full-fledged movie out of it, which was pretty freaking cool to me. Well, a lengthy movie that I was a part of. So it was an enjoyable time. Like, I liked it. And I'm not going to go so far as to say, like, the story was like this, like, blockbuster, it blew my mind sort of thing. But the way they told it and the character dialogue and how they were written, I thought was great. All the characters were pretty cool. And it's funny because I have another game I'm reviewing later that I think does the same thing, but in another way. But I also didn't even mind the idea of like her getting the whole "come out here, your answers wait for you here." She's like, "Well, I guess I better go. I'm going to go to this crazy place." Like, they did all that right, like with the tropes and stuff in that regard. So to me, this game is legit. Like, it's a good time. One thing I need to mention though, this game does like, you know, what do they call it when it's like static imagery, where you kind of go from like scene to scene, and they kind of like, you know, like you walk past a point and all of a sudden like the camera switches and now you're walking away from the screen versus towards the screen or whatever.
Like how it has fixed third person camera angles.
Yeah. Like how Resident Evil 1 did it.
Yeah.
Apparently that was because, and I should mention that because I think people would want to know that the reason why it is like that is not because of like they couldn't or they didn't know how to. Apparently there was like during testing, people were getting sick from having a free moving camera with two environments on the screen, which I can totally understand, because even with it being fixed, sometimes I was like, man, my eyes are trying to look at both sides at once and it's having a little bit of trouble with that. But but you get used to it. It's not a game killer. It makes some of the chase sequences a little annoying, but you get over it eventually. But let me do one last thing here, because I want to screw over the developer, because they do have some system exclusive features, but I didn't care about those. In fact, I actually turned them off. Most notably, there's like certain areas, like on a puzzle, right? Like you push the button, you go to like an image where it's like, okay, you're looking at a control panel, you want to scroll around to click on buttons and stuff. You can use the PS5 controller to just like kind of like motion control for stuff and press buttons and operate things instead of using like the thumbstick to do it. But I didn't care for it, and I just kind of turned that off and stopped doing it. But one thing they do have, which I think would have been Xbox too, unless the Xbox doesn't have this on it, is when you're looking around and you're exploring, every once in a while you'll come across like an object that you use your insight ability to like kind of zoom in on and unlock like a memory that's kind of contained in that object. And when the memory plays out through dialogue, the sound comes out of the controller of the PS5. So every time it happened, because I didn't wear a headset for it, I just kind of took the controller like a cell phone and put up to my ear to listen to it. And I thought that was kind of cool. So it was like sort of like
Xbox controller doesn't have a speaker. So
in that case, with that, would have probably been like through like your headset. Like if you connect your headset to the controller, it might let you do that. But in the case of this game, it totally does that. Oh, never mind. I guess that is a Day Zero patch includes controller speaker support for selected audio. Boom. There it is. Ha ha. But to me, those are the main things worth noting as far as like new, like, you know, specific unique features for the game. But in my opinion, there's also adaptive triggers, which honestly, it was my first time even really fully experiencing that too, where it's like, depending on if you're allowed to use it or not, the buttons kind of harden out a bit so that you have to press it a little harder to get more feedback out of it, which was weird to me because that's like how you would run sometimes. Like if you wanted to run, you held down the left back trigger. And if it wasn't an environment where you were meant to be able to run, your trigger was just like this flappy button. Was like boop, 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 boop. But when it was time to be allowed to run, you were capable of running, you push the button. It's like, oh, crap. this won't go down. I have to actually put pressure onto it. I have to apply more force. So it was kind of cool to experience that. But I'm rambling. I know I talked a lot about this game. But at the end of the day, I feel as though, just by virtue of the fact that I really just tore through it, it is a great game. Just know that this is not a survival horror game. You do not use weapons. And even the spirit burst thing I talked about is more like, oh, that's like more puzzly than like any action at all. It's more puzzly stuff. You're playing through a story, but it's a good story and very enjoyable. Slight trigger warning though, but I won't say what it is because that's a story spoiler. But just putting it out there, like if you're a bit squeamish about certain touchy subjects, you might want to steer clear of this game. But I will say that it's not used in a way that's stupid or just like, oh, this is edgy. No, I think it's done very well in this game in a way that it actually forwards the narrative and it's not just thrown in there for shock value or whatever. So, but it's a freaking good game. I was a fan and I wholeheartedly recommend it.
Oh, so for $50, your official verdict?
I'd say it's a solid buy it as long as the money's not an issue for you. Otherwise, get it on sale. But either way, buy it at some point.
Aki's saying that's the most useless trigger warning because trigger warnings are supposed to tell you what is triggering you.
I get that. Like I was actually talking to a friend about that the other day, talking about doing this review. And I was like, I have trouble thinking of how to do trigger warnings properly because I feel like they should say, you know, like, you know, sexual content or violence or vulgar language or anything like that should just be kind of stated in bulk. But if you say specifically what it is, it spoils the actual narrative for people who are coming in and they just want to play through the narrative. But at the same time, you still want the warning for people who don't want to experience the thing itself. So it's literally just one of those things where,
Cool, but overall, you still really enjoyed the game?
Absolutely.
Cool. Paul, did you ever get around to playing this on Xbox?
I did. I reviewed it.
Did you? I don't even remember. That is how friggin' fried my brain is right now. I can't remember. Oh, Jesus. What are your thoughts on the game? Anything you want to say in addition to what he said?
No, I love it. It's wonderful. Blooper Team are my babies and they can do no wrong. So everybody should play it.
Helpful.
Yeah. Well, I just
think I'm trying to stretch out the show for something and no one's helping me here.
I don't want to do that.
You want the show to be short? What are you talking about? Right.
See, we have someone who has to join us, but they're not ready yet.
Well, here's this. I do think that the medium is a far more accessible horror story as far as Blooper Team's horror goes. It's not cranked up in such a way that it's uncomfortable or terrifying. And even if you feel like you're not super into horror, you may still find yourself enjoying it because it's kind of horror light.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, it's more atmospheric than jump scares and like danger around every corner.
Bills itself as a psychological horror adventure. So
it certainly plays on the psychological side of things. And of course, like Pernell said, there's the content warning and all that. If you do struggle with psychological issues, then that's something to keep in mind because this game will play on that psychological horror
part. Also playing on that psychological horror is our very good friend George Norg. How are you doing? We've got a Norg on the show.
I know.
I come out of the cave just to see you all.
Yeah, how's it going?
Norg of the jungle.
Oh, wow. If I had a dime for every time I heard something like that when I was growing up, I'd have a shitload of dimes.
You could afford to not give a fuck, huh?
I could definitely afford a much more expensive not give a fuck.
Get plastered up on like in the sky, like skywrite it. Don't give a shit. Just do That's it. Right.
Guess who's got no fucks to give? This guy.
The garden of fucks is barren.
You know my crops would have been.
What were your crops? Ears of fucks?
Bales of shit. I have in my possession this entire bushel of fucks. And no, I have no intention of giving in a single one of them. No.
you're like, you have zero fucks, but what do you have, bales of shit? Can I have one? No.
Man. So, George, how are you doing?
Nothing! Good day, sir!
So, George, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty freaking fantastic today, actually, because I finally, after about 3 weeks, now have a fully functioning work server because, guess what? We got ransomware'd.
Oh, shit. No.
I shit you not. And our backup structure was not in good order. And as a result of that, it took me 3 weeks basically to get everything up and functioning again. So let this be a cautionary tale to anybody who happens to be listening. If you don't have three backups, you don't have one backup. Back your fucking shit up.
Oh, yeah. And if you don't care enough to back your shit up, then be prepared to lose stuff and not care.
See, I lost stuff and I cared and I earned it. You know, I earned that. That one is entirely and completely on me.
But you can use your experience to warn others.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. hell yes. My fervent mission from this day until the end of this day and many other days is to do everything and anything I can to make sure that no one else ever has to go through that again, because it sucks. And it's in addition to the fact that it's expensive in terms of time and money, it's a psychological motherfuck. And
good timing for that.
You're reminding me I should buy a hard drive and just back everything up that I have on my computer right now.
God, please yes. do. You get should. Two of them. Like, seriously, get two.
What kind of rich motherfucker are you talking to? Two hard drives?
Remember,
you can get like a 1 terabyte so external nowadays. For like $50 these days.
I was just about to say that because, Joe, you're old enough with me to remember when a single gigabyte hard drive was like $400.
I remember spending $80 to get Ashley a 4 gig thumb drive at Walmart years ago. $80 for 4 gig.
CBS. You can get a CBS for $10.
I don't even want to go back and think about how much the 20 megabyte MFM hard drive in the first machine I built would have cost. Just we have come a long way in terms of storage. Storage is cheap. Losing your shit will motherfuck your face up. So just back your shit up.
Aki, how many fucking hard drives do I have? I have one on my Xbox Series X, one on my PS5. That's it. All I have for external hard drives. I used to have more. I used to have like 2 8 terabytes out in the living room to my Xbox One, but I figured I don't play in the living room that much anymore, so I dialed it down a lot to something a lot more reasonable, like 5 terabyte instead.
Nice.
I gotta replace my darn one. I still feel like that's why my games load so slowly, man, is the hard drive. But
you just need to dive in and get a Series X.
Are they even accessible yet? Are they still hard to get just like before?
They're getting easier to find. That doesn't mean they're easy to find. They're just getting easier to find.
And my brain still has me thinking, got to get it at Target because that's where my money's already sitting. But we'll see how that plays out. But like, yeah, honestly, it may be something I end up doing. But I don't know. Because like right now, like I said, like, as you already know, I have like the Model 1 Xbox One, so.
Anyway, George, you're here to talk about a game. You ready to do this?
Oh, I guess I should. Hey, while I'm thinking about it, though, if you happen to know anybody who does like those animated explainer videos and stuff, and they want to do a portfolio piece and want to go in and share on some of the production stuff, let me know, because I don't really want to do it myself, but I will if I have to. But I'm going to try to put together a series of videos that explains the vulnerabilities and ways that you can avoid those vulnerabilities and things that you can do to lock stuff down, and just like little short clips that like the average person can watch instead of like, how do I describe it? All of the internet security articles that I've been reading since it happened. And now that it happened, every other thing in my feed is an article about internet security. Seriously. Like all of it is talking in a way that the average person has no chance of fully comprehending because it goes way deep into the technical aspects of it, which is stuff that mostly I understand. But how do you explain it? Explain it so that my mom could understand it. And they're like, oh, we can't do that. I am pretty sure I can condense all the information that I've learned and present it in a way that it will at least make sense to my mother. And if my mother can make sense of it, just about anybody else who's running a small business or has their own movie server or whatever should be able to do some of these things to shore up their security. Anyway,
what would you call them?
Call what?
Call the videos.
Oh, explainer videos. That's kind of the category that they fall into. You can you get
your name for it. Like what would your fun title be?
Oh, I don't know. A cautionary tale from the depths of ransomware despair. I don't know. something like that.
Norgs blorgs.
Norgs blorgs. Yeah. Make it a video, make it a blog, make it a podcast. Just share it everywhere so that people don't get fucked like I did.
I just hope in 5 years I'm buying a tube of lip balm that says Norgs blorgs on it.
That's a different kind of blorg. We don't like to talk about that blorg in public.
Oh, God. All right. Next game of blorg.
And we're off the chain.
This is getting filthy. Next game to talk about is called Monster Train First Class, developed by Shiny Shoe, published by Gambitious, released August 19th on the Switch for $29.99. Monster Train brings a new strategic layer to roguelike deck building with a tactical twist. Defend not one, but three vertical battlegrounds simultaneously as you fight to protect the final pyre against the forces of heaven. No playthrough is ever the same. It's a fresh challenge every time. You never play the same deck twice. Norg, tell us about your time with Monster Train First Class.
So when you asked me if I wanted to take on a game on the Switch, and I told you it has to be the right kind of game because I was in a foul mood. The reason I was in that foul mood was because of the ransomware attack. And you told me that you had a card-based game. And I sat there. I thought, I like card-based games. I really like card-based games. I think I need to take a shot at this. So you sent it over to me, and I have not put it down since you sent it over to me. I don't even know how many hours I've spent on this because I thought I was just going to kind of do like 10 hours or so, the cursory review and kind of get a sense of how the game works and everything it does. And I cannot put the blasted thing down. It's never boring. And sometimes it's really irritating, but most of the time it's, oh my gosh, it's everything I've ever wanted in a kind of rogue light card based strategy, take your turn, never know quite what's going to happen next game.
Well, damn.
So how do you want to go about this? Do you want to talk about how well it was ported to Switch, or do you want to talk about just the game in general, or should we just talk about all of it?
I'd say just do the good, bad, ugly like normal, and we'll see what topics you hit.
Okay. I'll start with the ugly, because I like starting with the ugly, because I have a face made for radio.
I know the feeling.
Gee. there's no ugly to this game. Forget it. No crashes, no freezes, no bugs, no nothing. Not a single...
Ice magic?
What's that?
No ice magic or anything?
There was some ice magic, but it was the good kind of ice magic. Okay, so the premise of this game is that you're like on this train, and you are you are the minions of hell, and the battles that you fight are like the minions of heaven. So you're the bad guy in this game, and you will go through a series of stages that get progressively more difficult. And after every third stage is a mini-ish boss of some kind. And then the final of the three stages is the last boss of the train run. And you have a variety of different things that you can select from. There are the types of cards that you can get. There are artifacts that will last through the whole game and impact various things. Like, they'll give you bonuses. They'll give your opponent debuffs. They'll give you more money. They'll make your opponents weep bitter tears, that kind of thing. And then there are different, you have like a champion that is your main card that you can play at the beginning of every stage. And then there are supporting characters in the form of spells you can cast, other minions you can summon, buffs, debuffs, like all the stuff that you would expect out of a card-based kind of game. The thing that makes this really interesting is each level that you play can be made more difficult with features that reward you with extra stuff at the end of each level if you get through without getting completely sacked. Every pathway is different. So when you finish a particular fight, you have to either choose the left track or the right track. The right track might take you down to a place where you can restore some of your core health and then visit a shop to upgrade your spells and then stop at a random encounter to see if you can get something cool. Or the left track will take you to a place where you can recruit a new minion and possibly make a copy of a card or buy things that will improve your minions. It's never the same each time. There are some aspects of each of the 5 or 6 clans. I'm not recalling off the top of my head, but there are aspects that make them completely different from each other. One of them is like just brute force strength. One of them is like super subtle type stuff. One of them uses other minions to eat them so that you can get new powers. One of them eats other types of minions to cause massive damage to each level. And every major clan is subsidized by a secondary clan of those same clans. And you select each one as you go in. There are incentives to complete a run with each of the different possible combinations. And once you get to the very end, it tabulates your score. As you earn more points for each of the clans, you unlock more cards. And I got away from the good, the bad, the ugly, didn't I?
A little. Kinda, it's okay. We love you anyway.
I got a little excited. This game is fun. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you said there was no ugly, so...
Not a damn bit of ugly. So
what bad was there?
The only bad... there were two bad aspects. One was a particular clan combination that was exponentially more difficult than any other clan combination, and it was the first two that you get. So you're right out of the gate. It's my expectation is that that combination would be like a stroll in the park, versus it was the last combination that I completed out of all of the possible combinations because I could not get a good run out of it. So that was kind of bad. The other bad is that there's no touchscreen enabled for this. I kind of thought that touchscreen would be a gimme, given the fact that this is a card-based game. And yeah, you scroll through
on the
cards.
On the Switch, hell?
And you touch the cards. And when you touch the cards, they do things. And when they do things, it gets really exciting.
But no, there's no touching. No touching.
You're crazy. I love you.
So anyway, on to the good stuff. I mean, I've already gone over quite a lot of it. I was just astounded at how much fun this game was. And I'm not joking when I say I have not been able to put the blasted thing down. The graphics are fantastic. The music is great. The sound effects are very well done. Maybe a teeny bit over the top at times, but it all fits into the realm of everything that's happening. It it sometimes feels like it might be a little bit busy in the audio department, but it's also kind of busy in the graphics department as some of the levels play themselves out and some of the battles just zip right through. So there is so much happening in the game artistically in terms of the music, the graphics, the overall feel, the aesthetic, the train decor, that they really went all out on the design and implementation of this game. And then the actual card battles, the card drawing, the options, the everything that you could conceivably do while actually playing the game. It's so bloody deep, even though on the surface it seems relatively simple. There's no other way to explain this. This is probably one of the best games I have played this year. And I just came off of Mario Odyssey.
Damn.
And I would, if you are into card-based games, I would pit this up with something that will keep you way more entertained than a lot of other releases this year.
Oh, you played this one, yeah?
I did.
Thoughts?
What'd you think of it?
I really liked it. For the most part, I thought the card battling was really solid. But I gotta be honest with you, I don't like defense games. I don't like tower defense type games. And so the defense element to me was a bitch and I didn't like it.
Okay.
It was one of those where I was like, it's an objectively good game. It just doesn't do it for me.
I can see that. And that totally makes sense because I went through a crack addiction of tower defense games when I got an iPad a long time ago and just like, ooh, what's this genre? Oh, I like defending things and I like putting up towers. So why don't I go ahead and play some more tower defense games of terrible graphical questionable choices and and horrible music. And but I'm defending things with towers. So yeah, I think I still have a little bit of that itch that needs to be scratched from time to time. And this one, this one definitely did it. If tower defense is not a genre that you can get on board with, then I can totally see how this would not be up your alley.
Yeah. I love my card games. I could sit here and ramble off a million of them that are fantastic. And Monster Train would be on there. But it would also come with the caveat that it's just not for me. It's good, just not for me.
I didn't even make the tower defense connection until you actually said it, because to me it felt more like a just like three levels of combat per stage.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, you, and now that you say it, I can totally actually see how it would qualify. But I never got that vibe from it at first.
Yeah. Well, cause, and that was one of the things, like, it took me a while to figure out why it wasn't resonating with me. I was like, I don't get it. It should be perfect for me. I play these so much, and it just didn't. And then the more I sat and thought about it, I was like, oh, I don't like protecting shit. I want to destroy shit.
now certain
savior thing.
Here's the thing. As you unlock more of the, levels and stuff, now that I'm really, really thinking about it, some combinations feel less like tower defense and more like just wreck the stuffing out of anything that comes after you. But some of the combinations are all about defensive. Like instead of just wiping the floor with the opponents every time they come in, some of them are more like, okay, you need to strategize the slow drip that is going to take them up to the third level so that by the time they're about to get into your throne room, or crystal room, I forget what it's called, they're already so wrecked that there's nothing they can do. Some of the combinations are absolutely like that. And that, to me, would be the classic tower defense idea, where there's no tower defense game where you can just kill everything the instant it arrives. No. You have to plan things out and you have to create pathways and different types of towers and different types of, I don't always want to do that. So there are combinations in here where it's just, okay, buff, buff, buff. And this one creature with multi-strike and trample eats everything. And for every monster it eats, it gets more buffs. It gets stronger. It gets more shields. And it gets more health. And so then you get the next round, and it eats everything. And by the time the actual boss of that particular level shows up, it doesn't stand a chance. I like those the best.
Oh, man. Well, George, I got to know, for $30, is this worth the ride, or should we get off the tracks?
Oh, I see what you did there. Oh, man. You see, I had that giant train whistle out here somewhere. I should have brought that in with me. And in fact, after I give my verdict, I'm going to go look for it. But yeah,
Jesus. We'll be halfway through the next review and out of nowhere.
Oh, you have no idea. And I'm going to make you wait for it. But yeah, this is definitely a buy. Absolutely go out and get this. Even with the caveat that there are aspects of tower defense to it. Oh, yeah. Get in on this. You will not be disappointed.
Cool.
Good thing it's already on my list.
Sweet. I know I'm going to go find that train whistle. I'll be back.
Norg, before you go. What?
Yeah.
Have you played Pirates Outlaws?
I played what?
Pirates Outlaws.
I am unfamiliar with that title.
Write that down. It's on Steam. You're welcome.
One moment. One moment, please. I have to pull up my Google machine. Yes. Pirate. No, not Peaches Pirates. Also complete.
Peaches Outlaws.
Pirates Outlaws versus Pirates Inlaws. That would be a different game.
That's true.
Kids, when it's time for the in-laws to come in, watch out, because some of your in-laws might be outlaws. It's Pirate In-Laws.
That's sitcom right there. Coming soon to Fox.
Coming soon to the CW. And
Paramount Plus. Oh, Jesus. All right, George, we're going to let you get going, or at least I'll act like we're letting you go so that we can move on to the next review and you could blow a train horn eventually. Do you have any final words before we let you go?
You had me a train horn.
All right, next game to talk about is called Cat Lateral Damage Remeowstered, developed and published by Men. I can't get through it without laughing. Remeowstered, developed and published by Manecoware, released September 15th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $14.99. The premier first-person destructive house cat simulator is back with a vengeance. Play as a mischievous cat, swat your human's possessions onto the floor, scratch up curtains, smash precious keepsakes, and show your owner who's boss. Chris, tell us about your time with Cat Lateral Damage Remeowstered.
Okay, so I usually do get first dibs at cat games because I made a list a couple of years ago, and it was like the top 9 best cat games of this year. And I actually put a lot of work into it. And now it's just like ever since then, I always pay attention to games that star cats. Anyway, right off the bat, I'm going to say this would appear on that list were I to make that list this year. So the Switch has no shortage of cat simulators, right? But usually it's like you're a cat and you go on an adventure into the wild, like Cat Tales, or like onto the streets, like what is that called? A Street Tale or something like that. Grab a sword and shield and go fight monsters a la Cat Quest. This is good game.
Love Cat Quest.
Yeah. I love all those games, actually. Cat all Quest of them are good. But this is the first true cat simulator. Like that actually simulates in total realism what it is like to be a dumb cat. So you start off with just the one cat. What is his name? Nippy. And but there are 19. No, this is more than that. 22 cats you can unlock, including a fart cat.
Beautiful.
Which I have unlocked. It's the only cat that doesn't have a photograph. Like, clearly these are all cats that, like, that people know or own, and, like, they took photos of them. Like, you know, the whole wall of unlocked cats would look like, you know, an Instagram feed. Except for Fart Cat. Fart Cat is a dumb cartoon.
That's beautiful. Yeah. We need an SML podcast DLC pack.
Right? Yeah. Like, well, and that's the thing, though, is that the second cat is a ginger tabby named Will, and that's very close to Wilfred, who is a ginger tabby.
There you go.
It doesn't quite look like him. There's one called Krogan who looks more like Wilfred, and I unlocked them both. Anyways, the gameplay of this game, we'll talk about that before we get into the huge amount of features. The actual gameplay is first person. Basically, it's the Skyrim of catness, you know, like, and more so than Cat Quest, because, like I said, this is actual realistic simulation. So you are in a house, in no danger. There's spots to nap and there's food to eat, but for some reason your cat is cranky. It randomly pulls from a list of reasons, and one of them is just like, I napped too long and now I'm cranky, and now people will pay. Like, different things.
That's
like that.
Very realistic.
Yeah, exactly. And or like, the humans are 2 minutes late with my food. It's, you know, time to destroy. And oh, by the way, this game does feature, because it's first person, it does feature camera inversion. So yay, both Y and X. So the idea is that you run around this house, and the whole point of it is to destroy everything. Anything that is on a shelf, on a table, is to be knocked off. You have two different attacks with your different shoulder buttons. One is the shoulder buttons are like a straightforward like jab, and a swipe. The classic swipe is the bumper buttons. Wait a minute, I have that reversed. Because I never remember what to call these buttons, because I stopped learning about things after this, you know, Super Nintendo era. But yeah, and you also can jump, and actually, I'll get back to that. Yeah, you can jump onto stuff and, you know, use it as a springboard for something else, to jump onto higher levels, and higher levels usually have the more valuable things. The game does a really, really good job of tracking. It's a little bit like Katamari Damacy in this way. It tracks every single thing that you drop. And there's like 523 unique items that you can collect. Like, basically, you collect by dropping it on the floor. And in fact, there are pictures on the wall and on the shelves and stuff of like different cats and everything. And if you knock them off, then you get cat picture points. Those are, there's a limited amount of those in every stage, in every regular stage. And if you collect enough of them, then that's how you unlock your new cat characters. You know, you basically, and it goes up in increments each time. So you kind of want to pick your favorite early on. Don't just try to pick, you know, the one next to the one you have, because the price goes up every time. Anywho's. Oh, I can help you make that counter, by the way. We'll talk about that later. We need a unique counter, honestly.
We do need a unique counter.
We really do. Anyways, so that's part of it. The other part is collecting treats. Now, you collect treats by doing especially bad behavior, which is interesting, because I'm like, this game was programmed by a cat. those behaviors are scratching up curtains. Every curtain in the house will get you one treat, and undoing toilet rolls, which are in every bathroom, of course. And that takes a lot of swipes. But once you do, you get like three treats. There's also cat scratching posts, toys, things that are actually for cats. But, you know, those are extraneous. And then. So the whole thing, it's not just running around, because you do have to pay attention to your energy meter. You only have so much kitten energy before you just, you know, clunk out and go to sleep and end the level. There are two ways to refill your energy. One is eating. There's different things to eat in the house, various plants, also your actual cat food. And you do have a Y button is your eating and biting things button, which is actually kind of cool because you can grab stuff with your mouth and like actually run around with them like before you dispose of them. So that's a good way to get like shampoo out of bathtubs, etc. And then there's napping spots where if you, you know, go to them when you're low on energy, then your cat takes a little nap and then refills some energy. And but yeah, back to the treats. The treats are another kind of point system. Those are basically your skill points, and you have cat skill trees. Your skills are basically you can dump some treats into more energy, also better energy regain. And once you top out energy, which I have, you have a lot of energy for these levels, which is great. They can last a long time. And then you have your paw strength. You also have your jump strength and unlockable abilities. You actually do get to unlock a double jump in this game.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, you need 30 treats for it though, so you're not going to get it right away. But it really makes it really helps you get to like the top of the things to get the good things. And that's the thing is that every single stage has a checklist of stuff, a la Untitled Goose Game. It has a checklist of things that they want you to do to get another kind of point, which is the bell points. And bell points are for unlocking more levels. So. You know, and there's several stages in here, including bonus stages, everything from houses to a marketplace or something like that, like a marketplace, and a library and like, you know, different things like that. Of course, at no point is your cat ever in danger. These are domestic cats. They have, you know, lives of luxury. They just want to destroy arbitrarily like our furry masters do. So. That's the goals. The main game is the goals game, basically topple stuff to complete goals and unlock new levels. Then it has a procedural mode where it procedurally generates all kinds of stuff in the same settings. So you can enjoy a different version of the game every time. And you still, all the stuff that you collect goes towards improving your cat or your, you know, knocking down pictures to unlock more cats and all that stuff. Like it all counts. Once you do, I only did one procedural level before they unlocked the third one, which is possibly the best one, the litter box, which is their clever way of saying it's a sandbox style. That is, you have no energy bar, all of your stats are topped out, and you just go crazy, and stuff will just kind of keep coming back. And again, even in this completely open, you know, we don't care, you know, just do whatever you want kind of thing. Like any treats that you pick up, those are still, they still count.
Nice.
Oh, and I wanted to say, like, even though, you know, of course, when you run out of energy, you leave the stage and, you know, it tallies up all the stuff you did. You can also like choose to just end the stage and, you know, you actually do still keep your treats and whatnot, although it won't calculate the different goals that you did. The best way to end a level is to jump in a box.
Yep. I remember that from the PS4 game way. Like I covered this years ago on the PS4 when it first came out. And then we covered again in VR on PSVR. Wow. And holy shit, that was a fucking trip. I'm thrilled to see it on more platforms. Like I'm so happy that this game is now on multiple platforms. It has all these new modes and all these upgrades.
I mean, yeah, I was impressed with how much. I mean, it's not surprising because the way people are with cats, I'm not surprised that somebody who made a simple yet super effective first person cat game, like just went all completely out on features and bonuses and like, you know, all that stuff. But still, yeah, excellent to see.
Well, as it stands, $15 on this one. What do you say?
Oh, absolutely pick this one up. I mean, if you're even half interested. Even if you don't like cats, this will build you up some empathy. you can kind of see the world through their eyes and be like, okay, yeah, this is actually really fun. So I can understand why cats do this terrible stuff all the time. My cat turned on my PlayStation today no less than 12 times while I was trying to work because
really,
it's in his path and it's a PS1. Yeah. So it's really easy to turn on the button. So every time it's just part of his path. So he walks up and stands on it and like tries to get my attention because it's right next to my face.
Nice.
And yeah, he keeps turning on my PlayStation. Only the PlayStation.
Clearly, you got to go back and play some Parasite Eve.
Yep. I mean, clearly. Actually, I don't have it, so I'm never going to play it. I didn't buy it back in the day, and now it's too expensive.
Who's going to stop the mitochondria now?
What?
True.
What was that, Pernell?
I said, who's going to stop the mitochondria now?
The powerhouse of the cell wins. Anyway, yeah, I have no notes on it. Really?
I didn't think you'd be celebrating this as the victory of the mitochondria, but here we are.
Found it!
God damn it, John.
That is an actual train whistle, too.
It says, train whistle lines made in USA. It is as long as my forearm and thicker than my fist.
Jesus, that's a big train. Now you have to send us a picture of that thing.
Now I just want to listen to 21st Century Kids.
Well, I mean, clearly the episode title needs to be All Aboard, so there you go.
All aboard.
Hey now.
Hi-yo.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Lake, developed by Gamius, published by Whitethorn Digital, released September 1st on Xbox Series X and S and Steam for $19.99. It's 1986. Meredith Weiss takes a break from her career in the big city to deliver mail in her hometown. How will she experience 2 weeks in beautiful Providence Oaks with its iconic lakes and quirky community? And what will she do next? It's up to you. Cole, tell us about your time with Lake.
I delivered mail.
Yay. What else?
I went on a hike on a trail and I looked out over top of the lake and it was lovely. And it kind of made me feel bad that I don't get to do that as much. I've been doing it more this summer in real life, but it was kind of nice to get to do it in a game on a rainy day when I couldn't go do it. The whole premise of the game is that it's all about small town drama. Boy, do I know me some shit about small town drama in a lake town, especially. Everything in the town is based on this road that loops around the lake. And Meredith, who has left this town 22 years prior to strike out as a computer programmer in the 80s, she has returned back home and she's kind of like on vacation from her normal job, if you will. But her vacation is her just like taking over a mail route for somebody as a favor. And so your whole job throughout the game is just to drive around in this mail truck and deliver packages. Sometimes you may get a quest where somebody asks you to deliver something outside of the postal system, and you shouldn't do that.
That's illegal.
Yeah. And that leads to a lot of the drama. I started getting phone calls about how I deliver shit when I wasn't supposed to. And I was like, I didn't know. I was just being nice. I was just delivering things. I didn't think the game would give a fuck. It gives a fuck. The game is meant to be a relaxing, easygoing, narrative type of experience. You really can't fuck up the deliveries. Every time you stop somewhere, it tells you where you're at. And so it's just a matter of if you're only supposed to deliver mail, the mini map will have a little icon that's just a letter. And if you're supposed to deliver a package, it'll be a package on the mini map. The mini map also has the address of where you're at coming off of it. So all you got to do is walk around to the back of the truck, press A, and find the package with the right address. You can't fuck it up unless you take illegal packages. Ask me what I did.
You took illegal packages.
I didn't know. I was being nice.
Yeah.
Okay. So I might have been trying to woo the video store chick, but it's fine. She just wanted me to deliver a VCR box. It was fine.
Aki just heard you say you could woo a video store clerk, and she's probably like, yes, the woman of my dreams.
It's small town drama, and boy, is it small town drama.
The girl at the video game store.
Not the video game store.
Oh, the video store. The girl at Blockbuster.
The best part is, like, the video store. It's all, like, VCRs. Because this game takes place in the 80s, right? And so, like, obviously they don't have licensing for Ghostbusters, but they're trying to really hit that 80s vibe, so it's Ghost Blasters.
Yeah, I saw a bunch of the VCR covers when someone was streaming, and they went all out with them.
They did. I spent so much time, and I took, like, all these screenshots because I was so tickled, and I just absolutely loved it. It was, like, 19 candles instead of 16 candles. So it was really well done. You can tell that this game was certainly a labor of love and that there was a lot of attention to detail, and I appreciated every bit of it. It takes place over the course of a couple of days, so you'll finish all the deliveries for the day. And sometimes you'll have interactions with people that'll have you doing other things outside of the of just delivering the package, which again, you should totally not do. But at one point, like, the crazy cat lady, she was like, you know, my cat's sick. Will you take him to another person to get it taken care of? And then, like, you deliver the cat. And he's like, oh, yeah, she feeds him cupcakes. And, like, he just comes here for a night and doesn't eat cupcakes and has some trout that I catch in the lake in the morning. And then he's fine. The cat's name was Mortimer. And so you had to, like, deliver Mortimer for a break from the crazy cat lady who feeds her cat cupcakes. I'm pretty sure that cat's got diabetes, but it's
fine. Probably. Overall, $20 on Lake. What are you thinking of this one?
I really love it. It's so out there. I will say there are three different endings, and so you're going to be spending quite a bit of time playing it. But I just enjoyed kind of sitting there and just taking in the story and the sights and the sounds and enjoying the game for what it was, even with all the chaos that I caused.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Next game to talk about is Tormented Souls, developed by Dual Effect and Abstract Digital, published by P-Cube, released August 27th on PS5 and Steam for $19.99, coming soon to Xbox, Series X and S, PS4, and Switch as well. Survival horror inspired by the original Resident Evil and Alone in the Dark series with a fresh twist on the fixed perspective adventure, Tormented Souls modernizes for a new generation as Caroline Walker investigates the mysterious disappearance of twin girls in a terrifying mansion. Pernell, why do these always happen in a mansion? Like, why doesn't it happen in, like, my grandmother's house or something?
Or amusement park, or the mall again. Go back to the mall like Silent Hill 3, but make it the entire game. I don't know, but, like, at least with this game, that part makes sense, as they're flat out being like, this is an homage to Resident Evil, which took place in a mansion for also reasons that were kind of ridiculous. But I will say this game kind of wore its influence on its sleeve as far as, like, a number of, like, ridiculous aspects of it all. Like, for example, earlier I was talking about the medium, how the main character goes off on her wild adventure because, you know, she's a medium and she's been looking for answers her whole life. And now she's got someone telling her where to come get them. You know, she's like, I took a chance. This girl is at home, minding her own business. She gets a postcard in the mail, the postcard or the envelope. And when she opens it up, it's a picture of two girls. She goes, ah, my head. And she goes, huh, who are these girls? I'll go look. I'm going to go on a trip to this mansion on an island now to see what's up with this picture. There's, like, I mean, I laughed my ass off, and I was like, why the fuck are you going there by yourself? Why are you going at all? This is a picture. Call the cops. Let them do it. But nonetheless, I'm saying this, and you might be thinking, wow, he's being a real dick about that premise. But no, I feel like really it kind of does a good job of covering, along with a couple other things in the game, that feel of a lot of old survival horror games, because many of those old classic games were built on premises that, until they give you the full story, just seem so ridiculous, like really ridiculous in certain ways, like Silent Hill 2. Why was Lara just walking around town despite the fact that, you know, the town was what it was? You know, people had theories about that, but they were all still just kind of ridiculous. But we didn't care because the game was fun to play and it was engaging to explore the environments and stuff. And I feel like this game is no different, because the mansion that you are in is legitimately enjoyable to adventure and explore through. It also has fixed camera angles. So you'll go down one corridor, walk off the screen, and then you'll be walking down the corridor from a completely different direction, but going the proper direction. It's ridiculous and convoluted in its own right, but that's how it is, and you deal. But I'll talk about that in a second. The game itself involves you exploring this mansion after, you know, waking up from a very unfortunate opening to the game, trying to figure out, one, how to get the hell out, and two, you know, how to, like, what the mystery is of the place you're in, and if you come across what deals with the photo you originally received to get sent there. As you explore the mansion, though, things are pretty fucked up. It's generally dark everywhere, no matter what. Like, many of the places you go to is like dark environments. And early on, you find a Zippo lighter, which you can use to light your way, which is good, because one of the unique features that this brings to the table that previous games like this did not have, unless Alone in the Dark did it, and I just didn't realize it, is the fact that being in the dark literally kills you. If you're in the dark for too long, the game will get like a garbly, almost like the TV is going out of focus, and then you'll get pulled away and killed flat out. So you can't stand in the dark, which is interesting for the next thing I'm going to point out, which is that as you're running around the mansion, monsters will show up. Creepy medical abominations, usually with grip clipping metal sounds, so you can feel extra terrified. This is all well and good if you are in an environment where there is light already established, because you can take them out with one of your trusty weapons, most notably your nail gun. However, if you are in a dark environment, you are defenseless, because if you cannot use the lighter and your firearms at the same time, or your weapon at the same time. So the crowbar or whatever, you have to actually unequip the lighter to use it. And if you do that, well, the darkness will kill you. So you got to run. And what ends up happening is an interesting dance of you trying to decide on like how to lure people to a lit environment if you hear noise that might allude to there being a monster in an environment, so that you can actually get there, arm up, and fire. But there's a challenge to this, and that is the aforementioned corridors on the, you know, established backgrounds or whatever, the static environments. If you're running from an enemy, they do have tank controls, which if you're using those, probably won't experience this so much, because, you know, you're just propelling yourself forward. However, if you're using the analog controls and you end up running away and then the camera angle shifts because now you're facing away from where you were running to and you turn left, well, don't be surprised if you bump into the wall and you have to realign yourself and the monster doesn't give a shit because he's being controlled by the computer and he's just coming right up to your ass. Prepare yourself for that. But that, I guess, maybe that's part of the fun too, because the game is designed around the classic style, which means you'll probably want to use tank control sometimes, but if not, just get used to the analog like I had to do. The thing that I especially like about this game, secondly, that is, I feel, is unique from previous games like this, is usually if you are playing something like Resident Evil or Silent Hill or whatever. Oh, God damn it. This is a cool word. Now I understand why he did it so much. is like, so a lot of those games, you'll be in an environment, like a section of a house, like, for example, like the east wing of the Arkley Mansion. And in that environment, Capcom sets it up where it's like, okay, this is the main puzzle of this area. Once you solve it, you can move on. And that is that. And it's like, that's how the game sets up for almost the most of it. It's like a puzzle that's meant to be solved, then you can move forward. This game, however, does it in a way where you'll come across a bunch of puzzles all while running around. There is no solve this puzzle, which then is clearly meant to lead you to this puzzle, which is clearly meant to lead you to this puzzle. Instead, you're given access to a lot of things you can find as you're running around. you'll come across a lot of different things that are going to allude to solutions to puzzles, and you'll have to remember what they are and then know to come and use them when the time comes to use them. The solution isn't always one-to-one. They're fairly intuitive. You might come across a solution that might not, you would not think would work, but actually does. You'll be combining items to get things to come out the way you need them to, and you'll utilize it in places where you want. And then hopefully you'll make a connection to go, wait a minute, I can use this maybe at that place where I saw the battery charger in the closet on the first floor, and you'll run back and do it. Also, you better remember well, because the map in this game sucks balls, which I guess may have been intended. I don't know. Doesn't change the fact that the map sucks balls. You just have to deal with it. Though for those who don't know, because I was surprised to learn this elsewhere, some people don't realize that you can actually bring up the map with the press of a button. But if you use the actual like thumbstick to turn the map when you're looking at it, on the back of the map, there's actually a graphic that tells you hit R3 to bring up the map. So that's pretty cool. However, I do wish that they also allowed you to hit a button and switch between the lighter angel weapons, because that is one of the main gripes I have about this game, which is the fact that you'll be switching between your weapon and your lighting source often. And there's no quick hotkey to do that. You have to go to the menu every time to scroll to the item and say equip, which is annoying. It is what it is, but it sucks that they still have you do that. Also, I think this is a feature, not a bug, is that I personally felt the game wasn't exactly easy either.
It is called Soul.
Oh, you stop. Actually, who knows? Maybe in their eyes, maybe, like, you know, we were kind of alluding to that a little bit. But they definitely did not hold back on like challenge here. This is not meant to be like, you know, an easy game in any way. For example, the save system in this game, just like how, you know, you'd have ink or tapes or whatever in various games, this game, it is ribbon tape. So, you know, like a tape recorder is like one of those like ribbon tapes that you can connect to the device and press record and you save yourself. But there's very few of those. They actually are hard to come by. Whereas in a lot of games where you'll have an abundance of save items, in this game, they are really as rare as they are. So if you find one and use it, don't be shocked if you don't see one for another 30 minutes. So also, there's no quick save. So even if you're like, well, maybe I'll just stop and come back later because I only wanted to play it for a few minutes, doesn't exist. So if you decide to play this game, you're in it for the long haul, at least until you get to another place where you find ribbon. But you don't even want to do that per se, because you might want to actually have that ribbon for a time where you want to do a protection save for yourself. So don't come to this game for quick and dirty play segments. You need to be ready to sit down and go into it. And also, just the last thing is that the combat, I mean, I guess it just takes a little getting used to, because there were definitely times where, like, I'm shooting at guys, I'm like, how in the hell am I missing? The game has partial auto aim, and I'm still missing the bastard. But there will definitely be times where you will die just because, quite frankly, aiming is just, you just suck at aiming the gun until I guess you adapt to it. There's even a jump back button where if you press it, you'll like do like a step back to dodge. But even with that, I'm like, how the fuck does he still hit me? This is ridiculous. And sometimes they even hit you with long range attacks where if the camera's not even panned in a way where you can see the enemy, you'll just feel yourself get vomit on your back. I'm like, how the fuck did that get there? But just all par for the course. But at the end of the day, the game is still enjoyable to play for me. I had a great time with this game. I loved how ridiculously cheesy the voice acting is. It's like terribly cheesy. And it's even got the dumb far-fetched scenarios, like how like people that shouldn't be in places just happen to be there and no one asks questions. Like very beginning of the game, you're being chased by a monster in a wheelchair with metal claws. You go into a door, slam it behind yourself, and there's just like a priest just standing there praying over a body with a Bible. And your character's not going, what the fuck are you doing here? And then he hands you the nail gun, and she doesn't go, why does a priest have a nail gun despite acting like there's nothing fucking wrong? But like, nothing triggers anything. It is perfectly normal because it's a survival horror game. No one questions any fucking thing.
Don't judge their life.
The old priest just gives you a nail gun and says, check out the library. Turn on the generator. Don't worry about it. How does he know these things? Fuck it. He's a priest. God told him. Whatever. But even despite all that, like, it's like, I think that just adds to the game's charm. Like, I laughed at all that stuff. I wasn't really like gripped or anything as far as like, oh, I can't wait to see what happens next. But I was gripped in saying, I want to see what puzzle I'm able to solve next. I want to see what area of this mansion I'm able to unlock and discover. To me, that is the game's primary charm. And I think that is also the game's main selling point. If you grew up in the era of classic tank control, survival horror games, where you actually were concerned about hoarding your ammunition and beating the guy twice with a knife to make sure he stayed down, because that's in this game too. This game is definitely has your name written all over it. This is a nostalgia bomb of nostalgia bombs, and I am glad it came out because it is worth your time.
Cool. Then $20, your official verdict.
It's definitely worth the money.
Awesome. And it is available now on Xbox. I just checked it released tonight. So
there it is.
There you go. It is available on PlayStation and Xbox. So check it out. Next game is called Monster Harvest, developed by Maple Powered Games, published by Merge Games, released August 31st on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $19.99. Monster Harvest is a monster collecting and farming action RPG with a twist. Grow, collect, and mutate your crops and then take them into battle. Filled with the places to discover and multiple ways to build your farm, get ready to craft, explore, and battle across the vibrant world of Planimal Point. Cole, tell us about your time with Monster Harvest.
You ever wanted to, like, play Stardew Valley and Pokemon's Bastard Love Child? Here you are. The problem with this game, though, is that it's kind of stuck in its infancy, right? It's very pared down in gameplay from those two mega games that it seems to be drawing inspiration from. And that's kind of a shame. Because the concept is a lot of fun. You go to visit your crazy uncle who has discovered these planimals, and it's basically plants that have had something added to them that your uncle has developed that turns them into animals. Okay?
Okay.
Your planimal, you can raise them from the literal ground up. And then you can take them into a dungeon and you can get into fights with them and they'll protect you. You can't even go into the dungeon if you do not have a planimal. Ask me how I know. It's because I got mine killed a lot. And eventually I had to stop attaching to them because I was just going to sacrifice them to the dungeon gods so that I could have a little bit of gold and iron. Again, though, that just kind of brings me back to the point that the game is horribly pared down from what you would expect from another game in this genre. We've seen quite a few of these, like, slice of life farm simulator type of games. Graveyard Keeper stands out as one of the biggest ones that's very similar to Stardew. Atomicrops has that Stardew meets roguelike hell going for it. So it's not an untouched genre. That also means that it's one of those genres that, like, if you are going to bring something new to the table, you really have to go ham on it. Because we've seen these games made by lone developers who really just pour every idea in the world into creating their game. And Monster Harvest just goes, that's a good idea. Planimals. And then that's that. That's where they leave it. You can upgrade your planimal if it survives fights enough. I couldn't keep one alive long enough to upgrade them. I don't know how it happens. I don't know. I will probably never know. Because I just keep throwing the poor little radish dudes at monsters in the dungeon. And sometimes you can't help it. You'll walk into a room in the dungeon and there's just monsters ready there to kick your ass before you can even move. there's no indicator of like this fight is too strong for you. This you can't see their health when you're about to get into a fight. It just is. You better hope you strike first. And even then, the game might still decide to say that the enemy struck first and you're fucked anyhow. It's just really limited. There's no tutorial phase either. So other than telling you, okay, hit the ground with the hoe, hit a rock with a pickaxe, and hit a tree with your axe, there's nothing that tells you like, okay, so if you want to fish, this is the process you go through for fishing. You can unlock a fishing pole, and you can go fishing. And the first time I fished, I sat there like, I don't know what the fuck I'm supposed to do. It doesn't tell you. It doesn't show you a button prompt. Nothing. I pulled the trigger because that usually works. The rod cast out, and then a bar came up above my character's head, and there was a little tiny bead just ping-ponging back and forth from side to side just as fast as it could go. And there was a little green bar. And I thought, okay, clearly I'm supposed to stop the bead in the bar, right?
Okay.
And it works if you can do it. And I managed to do it one out of about every 75 times I try.
Oh, geez.
Because it is so insanely fast and the bar is so insanely small. There's no good reason for that. All right.
It's probably one of those things where the devs just like got into a rhythm with the timing and they're like, oh, this is simple enough.
They think it's fine. No. And it's not. And then to top it off, once you do manage to catch something by stopping the bead in the bar, if you can get that far, then the next step is that it pops up with another bar. And then this bar was just shrinking really quickly. No explanation, no button prompt. Nothing. You're supposed to mash the A button until you reel it in. It never tells you that. Doesn't show you that. Anytime that a character actually gives you any kind of instruction, they'll use vague terms like, use the interact button. Okay, but fucking which one? All of the buttons are interact buttons if you don't tell me which one interacts. So you basically just kind of had to fumble around and push all the buttons until the right one worked. And then by that time, you were out of stamina and couldn't actually go fishing anyway, so you might as well just go home and go to bed. There was one thing that I did enjoy, particularly, that I wish more games in this genre would do. It's inevitable when you have these kind of stamina systems in these slice of life type of games that you're going to run out of energy long before like the day is actually over. And it's always annoyed the shit out of me when it's like my character wakes up at 7 a.m. and they're back in bed for the day at 8:30 because I've already used all their energy. The nice touch that Monster Harvest has is that you can actually decide to wake up in the evening like you took a nap. And so at that point, then you can interact with the nighttime things that happen in the nearby town. So like the saloon is only open in the evening. So, hey, if you're low on energy, you don't have anything else to fill your time, go take a nap. And then when you choose to spawn back in, you can choose evening or night or next morning. That's a nice touch. I would like to see that more. But unfortunately, that's kind of one of the few things where I was like, oh, they really come up with something creative there. And I'm really happy to see that. as far as everything else goes, though, it's like, I get what they're trying to do. And it's fine. But also, there's a lot of other options out on the market. This is a crowded genre. And there are some really good titles in it. And it's a lot harder to point out this one when it scales back on so many of the systems that you've come to expect in these kind of games.
No. Well, as it stands, $20. What do you say about Monster Harvest?
Oh, it's $20. Oh, goodness. I'm going to kind of go with a hesitant try it. Maybe wait for a sale. Okay? Because it's not, I don't hate it. It's not bad. It's a relatively easy completion. But also, it's just, Stardew Valley is only 15. So I can't be like, yeah, you should run out and buy this when it just doesn't. It's too pared down for me.
Makes sense.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Oh, well. Next game is Revo, developed and published by Cosmic Misfit Studio, released August 24th on Steam for $14.99. Neon shoot 'em up to a retro-fueled synthwave soundtrack. You've drifted into a sinister space storm far from civilization. Dark ships quickly close in on you, rescued by a mysterious symbiotic vessel. Your only hope of escape is to equip for combat and fight for your life. Chris, what's going on in this one?
I don't know. The story is pretty minimal. I like that. You just told me more than I knew from the game, having played it for hours.
Oh boy.
No, that's okay though, because this is a shmup, which is a shmup is short for shoot 'em up. A shoot 'em up is a genre of video game where you're one small thing and you blast a whole bunch of other things. Please play the game Beaker Reloaded if you want to check that out. Get a nice tutorial
on what a shmup is.
People still are asking me what is a shmup, and I have to tell them every time. That's my duty as a journalist. <It's>,
using that anyway. Term pretty liberally there, buddy.
Yeah, I know.
Journalist.
Journalism. Anyway,
you're not even real journalism.
Yeah, I mean, touche. Yeah, touche.
I am. I'm against
gatekeeping, but also, you know, anybody who would say I'm not a journalist has a point. But yeah, back to Revo. This is a vertically scrolling shmup. Interestingly, instead of being one that is narrow, like normally vertically scrolling shmups take up basically the middle 33% of the screen, so that you know, because they're designed for taller screen cabinets, Tate mode basically, and you know, you can turn your monitor around to like get the full picture, but usually they're made with this in mind, because playing fields on vertically scrolling shmups tend to be kind of narrow. This one is actually ultra wide. It's not only wide enough to touch both ends of a wide screen, it also has bits outside. It has margins like that you can scroll into. Like, so that's the first time I've seen that in person kind of thing. Skyforce. Oh, that's cool. I don't know Skyforce, so maybe this has precedent. But yeah, you play a little ship and you start off with, you know, your basic straightforward shot, and you know, you'll notice immediately when little enemies come down from the top of the screen, or rather you know, from somewhere forward, that they kind of follow Galaga patterns. This game is heavily inspired by Galaga. It's even in the about section of the game. It mentions also mentions that this is a one person dev team. So this is made by one person. That's quite impressive. So you know, shoot at these simple ships running in these patterns. And then the second thing that you're going to notice is that it is a fast shooter. There's many different flavors of shmup, and this is a somewhat rarer one, actually. It's akin to Bullet Hell, but it's basically where ships come at you really fast and they shoot you even faster. So there's, you know, the whole screen is not covered with bullets, but the bullets that do come are like,
they're not messing around.
They're not messing around. You got to be on your twitchy game, your twitchy thumb game. And but that's okay, because the cool thing about this game is that it's extremely generous with the one-ups. Essentially, if you have a shield meter and then an armor meter and then a collection of lives. So as you get hit, your score multiplier will go down, which is a bummer if you're really into this genre. But if you're just trying to pass the game, then it's not going to bother you. But as you get hit, your shield meter goes down, and eventually it will hit your armor. And, you know, if you do a real bad collision, like a real bad shot, or run directly into like a big ship or something, you might actually just immediately blow up. But every enemy drops two kinds of collectibles that do float towards your ship. So that, I always like to see that. I like to not have to sweep, you know, sweep up my my power ups. But if you are too far away from them, they don't come to you. So you got to do a little bit of sweeping. Anyways, they will you know, one of those two power-ups will increase your shield up until the point where you have max shield, and then it adds another life to your stock. Again, your maximum is 3, and if you get a game over, then it's, you know, it's game over. You don't get to just continue. There's no rich kid strats here.
No.
But you can start any stage at any time. It actually saves your progress. So that's actually somewhat even better. I mean, arguably, some people just really want those rich kid strats. Rich kid strats, by the way, are where you can just press continue and it starts you exactly where you were. Maybe you lost your score or something, but you don't lose progress. So you can just hit, you know, you can continue your way throughout the entire game. So that's a Chris Taylor term. I don't know who else uses that. I call it rich kid strats.
I do because of you.
Yeah, it's because if you were rich, then you had enough quarters. You had like the whole...
To get through fucking Shredder.
Yeah, to get through these arcade games, you know? Yeah, to get through Shredder. Yeah, totally.
Dickhead with his auto-kill moves.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, you get me. So anyways, there's another aspect to this game that's interesting, and that is limited ammo, which you don't see often in shmups.
No, you don't.
Gun that you get, and by the way, we'll get to the guns in a second, but you do get more guns. They have a certain point value applied to an ammo point value, and so as you're blasting away, like usually in shmups, you just hold down the blast button and just, like, you know, especially bullet hells, you just kind of, you know, but some games try to mitigate that and make you play a little more precisely by giving you point multipliers for, you know, accuracy. This one just straight up makes you run out of bullets if you don't, if you're not careful.
Now, does so it regenerate, or do you have to pick up pickups?
The pickups are the regen. The other thing is that, like your lives, your ammo has 3 refill ships, basically, like 3 refill packs that will come onto the screen. So if you use up all your ammo and you haven't restored it, then it will send out a little ship really quickly, and it'll drop like a full store of ammo that your ship will, you know, suck up, and then you can go keep going. But once those 3 are out, then yeah, you gotta kind of get into dodge mode, I guess, until you get more, you know, stuff going. I never fully ran out of bullets at any point in this game. All I did was just lay off the bullets for a second. But that kind of enters into the strategy, because now we'll get into the other kind of weapons. So on top of your straightforward shot, which can be improved, but the improvements, of course, come at the cost of higher ammo points. Like, you know, you can do like a wave of bullets rather than just 2 straightforward shots. And then that, you know, is much more efficient, but it also costs more. And some of those shots will get scattered off and not hit anything. And therefore, you know, the economy of it means that you might run out of ammo. There's that. That's the standard shot. And then each of the face buttons actually has a different kind of shot assigned to it that you get to set in the menu as you collect the guns. And so the one of them is a side shot that you can use. And that, of course, also improves. And, you know, the improvements come with higher ammo costs. And then there is a it's hard to describe, because I've seen this in a few games, but it's basically... It starts off as just like a vacuum pulse, which disables the enemy guns and turns like their guns into ammo for you. So that's your way of refilling, is to use. And that has a charge up sequence. You can't use it all the time. It takes about 15 seconds to load up. So like that 15 seconds is very intense if you're out of bullets, which, again, like I said, I never fully ran out of bullets, but I have had to use that thing a few times. And then there is the really strong, straightforward shot for bosses. This one, you know, you can use like this pulse rifle thing that just really adds a lot to your standard shot. You can also use all of these at the same time if you want to. Just, you know, mash your whole palm onto the controller and go all out. But then you're going to run out of ammo in like seconds.
Not the smartest strategy.
Not the smartest strategy, but it is possible. The second straightforward boss killing shot that you get is a super powerful shot, but it costs 1,000 ammo. So basically your entire store And then you have to wait for a refill to come by. Like, it is a like Hail Mary of, you know, of shots. But that's really cool because I really like this variety of guns. And I like, you know, I would normally scoff at a limited ammo type of shoot 'em up, but this one has such a clever way of turning it into strategy. And, you know, at that point, I'm actually fully on board with it. In fact, I would say that it improves the game considerably over what you'd normally see in the indie vertically shooting, scrolling shooter realm. Oh, yeah.
Well, as it stands, $15. What are your thoughts on Revo?
This is a really good one, and I do say it's a buy it. You know, $15, that's pretty typical. And, you know, I'm not super into, like, the aesthetics of it. It's got really oversimplified, you know, enemies and stuff. And the soundtrack is just synthwave, which, whatever. I'm starting to become pretty, you know, jaded about that. But, you know, that's okay. And also, by the way, I didn't mention about enemy things that I really like. Some of them actually will require a different kind of shot. Like, enemies will be fully shielded in the front, so you have to get up there and hit them from the side. And, like, they do a lot of levels where, like, you know, you really have to, like, use strategy there, and I really like that. Anyway, gameplay-wise, the gameplay aspect of this game absolutely sells it. The aesthetics are, like, whatever, but, you know, they're good. They're functional and good. It's just, you know,
not for everyone.
I've seen some beautiful, you know, shmups out there. And anyway, no, this is a buy it for sure. I'm nitpicking right now at $15. So just go out and get it if you're a fan. Cool. It's really fun.
I know the dev has been looking for reviews for the Steam page. Do you have a box quote you want to say?
Ah, man. Can I write one?
Oh, we need it now.
Okay,
because it's got to be a quote from the review. This is the review.
Yeah, no, this is the review, but I didn't know I needed to actually write something.
No, I mean, you're not supposed to know. You're just supposed to say it.
Right.
Supposed to come from the heart.
With a winning box art review, yeah, right off the top of my head. Winning box
quote off the top of your head on the spot. I mean, Carnage has one.
Well, Carnage has one?
Yeah, Carnage has a quote.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. So if he could get one, anyone can get one.
I'm going to say Revo is, gameplay-wise, one of the... I can't on the spot. I have to, like, put fingers to keyboard. Just one of those things I said about the gameplay. The gameplay actually absolutely sells this one.
Revo, it's better than Carnage.
There you go.
All right. One final game to talk about tonight is called Mad Streets, developed and published by Craft Shop Arts, Inc. Released August 27th on Xbox One for $19.99. Mad Streets is the kind of game that makes you crack a smile all while punching someone in the face. It's a physics-based party game meshed with a brawler that feels like an evolution to the genre, with a deeper system that allows skilled players to direct their blows or face-crunching KO animations that wouldn't look out of place in MMA highlights. Purnell, tell us about your time with Mad Streets.
Mad Streets is essentially Gang Beast if the characters had character and a general variety of modes for play with the mechanics at will, at accessible to the players. So in Mad Streets, every character is essentially like a ragdoll brawler. You have four face buttons, each one attributed to either left or right, and then high or low attack. And then you have a left and right grab button, which is associated with the left and right arms. And you have a dodge button for, like, you know, just, I guess, like a squat to dodge. I never used it. And then the one level where I tried to use it, which was a level for dodgeball, it didn't dodge. So I was like, whoops. And then lastly, you have a button for your mad attack, which is like a super move you can get when you charge up enough of a super meter. So the way the game ends up playing through is, like, your primary thing that you'll want to do when you boot the game up initially is go to, like, the Mad Rush mode. And in Mad Rush, you get to choose between one of four different cliques in this high school that you're playing in. Like the jocks, the goths, the rich kids, you know, with the rich kid stretch. And I can't remember what the fourth group is, to be perfectly honest with you. Probably something that lends like the monsters or something weird like that. But essentially, when you pick one of those, there's like a very like rudimentary like narrative for the game for each like group of characters. Or you'll pick one of the four characters that is associated with that clique, and then you'll play for the story mode. And it's like just like Ricky Dink, like ridiculous stuff, like nothing like crazy driven. Like you're like one level, you're like, hey, the goth kid had, or the punks, that was the fourth gang. And they go, hey, the leader of the punks is having a party. Let's like throw bombs into his party and destroy it. So you throw bombs in, and then you steal the presents. And then on the next level, you try to give the presents to a girl you like, and they have explosives in them, so she tries to beat you up. So like it's like that's the depth of the narrative.
Fucking
so
spy versus spy.
Yeah, there's some ridiculousness there. I'm like, what the heck? But each level in and of itself, and I kind of like highlighted it just from that description alone. Each level has its own overall goal that differs wildly between each stage. One level, you might literally be just trying to beat each other up. Like either you and your teammates beating up another group of kids or vice versa. Another level might be you defending yourselves against like a group of unruly people who just want to beat you up, you and your group up. Another level, you might be trying to light a fire by throwing kindling into the fire, which means you're running around grabbing logs with the grab button and then pressing the throw button to throw it into the fire to get points. And then other things, of course, like bomb throwing and dodgeball and just weird stuff. And after each of these levels, you'll get points, depending on what you did. Like either you threw, how many logs you threw in the fire, or how many people you knocked out, or how many bombs you had collide with a present, stuff like that, and then so on and so forth. And that's the party game, that's because at the core, this is a party game. And at the end, you're trying to get first place by getting the most points across all the different events. During these mad rushes, though, and the reason why you want to do it, even if you're, whether you care about the story or not, the reason why you want to do the mad rushes is because you can unlock characters for each one of the big each one of the gangs. And in addition to that, you unlock stages in their respective play styles for like the rumble mode. So if you like the idea of doing like the defend yourselves against the people who lost money on your sports betting, well, then you want to unlock that mode for a rumble. And the interesting part was that at first I didn't think there was even a difference in the characters because they have different builds. Like some are really huge and bulky, some are like small or whatever. But I was like, of course, just think, okay, well, the buttons say it's just like left and right punch and then like left and right punch and then left and right low punch. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, the guy I first chose like this really hulking buff guy and he just threw punches. Like no matter which button I press, he was throwing a punch. I'm like, okay, I don't even really see the difference in the high and low. But then after that, I picked like a smaller girl character. And then her low buttons were kicks. Like she had like kick attacks. And I was like, okay, now this is more pronounced. I can see what the difference is in the two button or the four buttons. So I made use of those. And at that point, I was able to like, kind of have an idea, a better idea of how I wanted to play the game. Now, the thing about this game, however, and honestly, this is something that people that are familiar with the genre are already going to know, but this is more for people who don't know. I mentioned earlier that it's like ragdoll physics for the characters. You'll either love that for how ridiculous it plays out as far as animations and like stuff goes, or you'll hate it because it makes for a weird sense of like it's not precise all the time what you're doing because you're like flopping about on the stage when you want to actually be, you know, sturdily grabbing things and throwing stuff or punching people or whatever.
Yeah, you've got to be into these physics kind of games to really get into stuff like this. Like if you couldn't get into Gang Beasts, I don't think you'll find much to enjoy in something like this.
100% agree with you on that. 100% agree. Because this is, even though it looks nicer and there are more characters than the individuals you're playing as and all that, at the core, it is pretty much Gang Beast as far as like all the mechanics go. So just be ready for that. But they do give you a lot with which to play with here, like between like the different modes. Like there's like a one punch mode where you're like, you go into a tournament and it's 1v1 matches and the winner of the tournament moves forward. There's the rumble mode that I mentioned before where you go through all, you can choose any of the ridiculous number of like gimmick stages that you unlock and play those. And just, there's a couple other things too, but also, you know, just general rumble if you want to just play basic beat the crap out of each other mode. And frankly, I think that's all right. That's what you want to get out of this. But I like the fact that there are more objectives on the stages than just the basic throw each other off the map or beat each other up, like which is what Gang Beasts pretty much is.
No.
So in that regard, I would say if you've been playing Gang Beasts and stuff like that, this is an easy buy, like 100%, because this is, to me, is an improvement on all of those games. Like it actually gives you more mechanics to play with in your general play sessions. If you don't like things like Gang Beasts and stuff, this isn't going to change your mind, so don't even bother. So I guess in a sense, maybe I feel like I'm just like the most non-review review ever, because essentially I am saying all three things. If you like Gang Beasts, this is a no-brainer. This is way better than that, and it has more features. It's a buy. If you don't like Gang Beasts, it's deny it, because it's more of the same in overall gameplay style. This isn't going to change your mind. If you've never played any of them, then it's a solid try it if you have people with which to play it with you.
Yeah, because I think that's like the biggest caveat. You need to have, like, you need to have friends with games like this too. And
100%. Because, like, without that, I mean, there the mad rush lets you play with like AI, and you can always like dump AI characters into the game, but it's just not the same.
Yeah, it's not the same without having friends to shit talk and punch and
just laugh at the ridiculousness that comes from the physics.
See, this is why we need an SML gathering, so we could all get together and play games like this.
Mad streets. And the streets won't be so mad, they'll be happy streets.
There we go. There's your box quote. Chris, do you have one yet?
Oh, was I still supposed to come up with one?
Oh, man, that is it for this episode. Thank you, everyone, for being here, hanging out, keeping us company. Big thanks to Tim and Norg for coming on, doing their things as well. I don't know. We're done. It's a long episode. Does anyone have any final words to end it?